Welcome to Straight and Curly,
a podcast for self-improvement junkies.
I'm Kelly Exeter.
And I'm Carly Jacobs.
This is episode 101.
Hello and welcome to Straight and Curly. Kelly and I, just before we started recording today, we were just like, because we both had crazy, crazy busy days. And so we just had to reframe where we were and be like, okay, we're podcasting. That's what we're doing right now. Just some positive self-talk. We were just like, because Kelly was off editing a thing. I was like knee deep in a crochet pattern that has just been giving me hell. So hi, welcome. It's nice to chat to everyone today.
Episode 101. I feel so weird saying that. 101. Yeah.
Anyway. It does. It's so weird. And also, just because there's so many different ways that you can say 101, like you can say 101 or 101. And those are the only two ways you can say it. But still, there's two different ways that you can say it, which is not true of all numbers. Anyway, so as we do each week, we'll be starting with one of the lovely reviews that someone has left us on iTunes. We share these reviews because we love letting people know that we've heard them. So today's review is from a listener whose handle is WordAddicts4785. He or she says, a wide variety of topics and great for reminding me about the things I really would like to think about and reflect on instead of just putting each day on rinse and repeat.
Oh, thank you so much, Words Addict, fellow Words Addict. And I do love the thought that we're helping you approach each day with intention rather than just coming at things on autopilot.
Autopilot. That's the reason why I picked that review, because I just thought that was actually a really lovely compliment that, it made people think a bit more about how they live each day rather than just getting up and going through the motions. I really liked that.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you so much, Words Addict. And time for our favorite. It seems so weird, like we just like jump straight in, but it's time for our second segment already. And it's our favorite segment of the week, everyone's favorite segment of the week, the one that puts Carly under massive pressure to come up with the goods, and it is Carly's random thing of the week. But first, before Carly tells us her random thing of this week, I just have a quick update for our listeners. If you remember that sawing, I don't even know how to say it so Americans can understand it, because we say
sawing.
No, we say sawing. No,
but American would say sawing.
Sawing, yeah, okay. The noise a saw makes, and Carly pronounced it soaring, and Americans are like, what is that?
Is that a bird? What are you talking about?
Anyway, that sound that she was hearing every single day from her neighbor's house, she still hasn't gone and knocked on their door to find out what it is, and it is keeping me up tonight. So, Carls, do I need to fly to Melbourne and do this for you?
Well, see, the problem is that I really would like to ask what it is, but then I don't want this guy to think that I can hear everything he does, because I can't. Like, the only thing I hear is this weird noise every morning and night. And I was just thinking, if someone asked me what this weird, I don't know, I kind of feel like it's an invasion of privacy.
Yeah,
and I realize that I told everyone on my podcast about it. But no one knows where I live. So his identity is completely protected. I feel like it's a worse invasion of privacy going over to his house and being like, excuse me, everyone on my podcast really wants to know what that noise is. So I won't be doing that though, because even though I'm nosy, I'm not that nosy.
Okay.
But I will keep trying to figure out what it is, I promise. Okay. So my random thing of the week. This one's pretty weird, and I'm pretty sure that Kelly's going to have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about, but I have a pretty good memory for celebrities and celebrity couples and who's dated who and that kind of stuff, and I discovered a celebrity couple that I'm pretty sure no one knows about, and I discovered it completely on my own randomly just looking up a celebrity on Wikipedia, and I'll tell you who it is, but anyone I've told this story to has absolutely no idea that this was even a thing. So
anyone you tell this story to is in the same boat as me, doesn't know celebrities. Okay, go.
No. The people I've told know celebrities, and they've been like, oh my God, I had no idea they dated. But one of these celebrities is really obscure and the other one isn't. So hopefully you'll know one of them. So I discovered that Abby Jacobson from Broad City was dating Carrie Brownstein from Portlandia. And I know that Kelly hasn't watched either of those TV shows.
So she has that. either.
No idea who I'm talking about. So I actually didn't know that Abby Jacobson was bi, and I was like, oh, so she dated Carrie Brownstein from Portlandia. And then I was thinking about, if anyone watches Portlandia, it's a show set in Portland, and there's a male and a female lead in it, and they are hilarious. It's like a sketch comedy show that's set in Portlandia, that's set in Portland. And Broad City is Alana and Abby. They're two girls that do a funny show in New York. So they're two comedy shows, and they're quite sort of underground. Like, you wouldn't know about them unless someone told you about them, or you stay up later than 10 a.m. and watch SBS, which counts Kelly right out. Yeah. So then I was thinking, the guy from Portlandia, his name is Fred Armisen. And I was like, just randomly, I just thought, who, like, what's Fred Armisen's go? Like, is he married? Does he have a family? So I Googled him, and it turns out that he was married to Elizabeth Moss from 2011 to 2014. So if anyone doesn't know who Elizabeth Moss is, she's the star of The Handmaid's Tale. She was in Mad Men. She's if you ever see Elizabeth Moss in anything, watch it, because she does not make bad career decisions as far as acting is concerned. But I was like, I couldn't believe it. Like, these are two actors that I know very, very well, that I couldn't even imagine them being in the same room together, and they were married for 3 years. And I know that this is like, Kelly's just kind of like, yeah, yeah. Like, I'm telling her about two friends that, you know, I know from high school who got married, and she's like, I don't care.
I will say, I have heard the name Elizabeth Moss. So that is vaguely familiar to me. I still have no idea who she is. But yes, I'm sorry. I am a big disappointment for anyone that wants to talk about celebrities, because I literally do only know anything about the people who are on Suits, but I know a lot about the people on Suits because I stalk them quite a lot on Instagram. So it's like whenever anyone tags me in something about Suits, and it's like, did you know this? And or you know, obscure things like that. Did you know this guy was Gabriel Mark's dad in real life? And I'm like, of course I knew that already.
Obviously.
Like, hello.
I knew that. Yeah. So, I mean, I knew that Kelly would just be like, this is making no sense to me whatsoever. But I promise you, I just blew someone's mind. And if I did blow your mind, please come into the Facebook group and tell me that I blew your mind. So I would like to think that there's more people out there who know who Elizabeth Moss and what Portlandia is. So, yeah, that was my cool random thing this week that will apply to two people who are listening.
And we'll hear from them. I'm sure we will in the group. I'm sure people will show me up for being like the Luddite I am as when it comes to celebrities. But on to our next segment for the week. And this one is called If You Were Our Best Friend, We'd Tell You. And it's one where listeners write in with their problems or questions, and we answer if they were one of our besties sitting with us and we were giving them advice. So, Carl, this week's question is from...
So Kelly's given me the fake name to use this week, and it's Jeremy, which is definitely not the real name, because this question came from a girl. But Kelly started to run out of girl J names. So,
and it must be a J name. Like, it's basically a thing now. It has to be a J name.
So, it just has to be a thing.
I'm going to start creating ones like made up ones like Janisha or something like that. Anyway.
Have you come up with Jane? Like, that's a solid girl J name.
But yeah, that's too plain. Sorry, Jane. All the Janes out there, please don't email me. It's not plain. It's a great name. I know many great Janes.
So girl Jeremy asks, I was wondering if you have any insights on consoling and listening to people. I personally get annoyed and hurt when I go vent or share my problems to someone, often a friend, and they respond with, oh, I've got it worse, or some other similar sentence. Basically, they don't listen. Also, I recently realized that when I listen to someone, I kind of zone out to rearrange my response and end up not completely listening. Any tips on that as well? Oh, and she's also said, congratulations on your 100th episode. I love listening to your conversations and listening to your podcast. Always feels like relaxing at cafe with your two best mates on a warm sunny day. That's so nice. Yeah, I just realized I included that compliment as well. I'm like, well, I might as well read it out when people say nice things about us. Yeah. Let's just pop it right in there.
It's like branded content. we just slip that in there in the middle of an agony aunt question. Anyway, my thoughts on this question. First of all, thank you, Jeremy, for the lovely congrats. We do appreciate them. Second of all, I feel your pain, and because I know exactly how frustrating it is to share your problems with someone and have it feel like they're either kind of minimizing your problems or trying to one up you with their problems. And I know this because I know I've done the exact same thing to other people. And I know it's not because I'm trying to trump. I will say, I don't think I've ever say, oh, I've got it worse. That's not part of my makeup. But I do kind of try to show people that I get where they're coming from because I've experienced something similar. And I actually don't even know if that is useful or not. Because, you know, like, you know, someone I know, they lost a sibling a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh, you know, I too have lost a sibling. So if you ever need someone to talk to. And then I was thinking, is that actually helpful to say, oh, because I've lost a sibling, you might want to talk to me? Because they're completely different experiences. Anyway, this is overthinking.
As someone who has not lost a sibling and shouldn't really comment on this, I feel like that's extremely helpful. I feel if that was something that happened to me and someone who had gone through the exact same thing offered me help, even if I didn't necessarily feel like it at that time, I think it would be comforting to know that that's there. Anyway, yeah. That's just my two thoughts on that.
Yeah, I always worried about, like, is this, you know, is this valid? But anyway, that, like I said, that's overthinking me talking about there. anyway, so I do feel this problem that Jeremy has shared is a fairly common thing because I don't think we don't really ever get taught how to listen and how to respond to people when we're sharing problems. And also, like, society, we are kind of taught that it's bad to feel bad. So we try to, we kind of rush to help someone stop feeling bad by, you know, saying whatever we think might help them stop feeling bad. And really, when someone's venting to us, you know, we think they either want us, like, we think they want us to solve the problem for them. And this is the thing that makes us stop listening and start preparing our reply in advance because we want to seem insightful and empathetic. But really, that person just wants us to listen to them. So I kind of, like, the short answer is when people seem like they're zoning out on you, I think it's because, you know, I don't think it's necessarily because they're insensitive douches who love hearing other people's problems just because it gives them an opening to vent about theirs. I think it's more often because they think you want them to come up with a solution. And so they're kind of trying to think about a solution. And in this case, because I do this with Ant all the time, you can actually stop them from doing this mid-vent. Like, if you see them kind of zone out, like, you can stop and just say, look, I don't need you to solve this for me. I just need you to listen. And that will help them stop zoning out. Going the other way, to be a good listener yourself, just listen. Like, literally just let your friend vent it all out. Don't prepare answers in advance. Just make empathetic noises. And when they're done, they'll tell you, what do you think, or what do you think I should do? But really, more likely, they'll say, just thanks so much for listening. I feel better now that's out than in. Yeah. What about you, Carls? What do you think?
I like that. I have a similar response. I find the best way to deal with people who are terrible at listening or are really bad conversationalists is to just model good conversation behavior for them.
Yes.
So if you ask them lots of questions and give good detailed feedback, it's the concentrating on what the other person is saying thing seems to be like whoever you're talking to is talking for too long. Like, if you're struggling to stay focused on what a person is saying, because I've met lots of people who don't seem to be able to read social cues of a conversation, and they'll just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, and then someone will try to jump in, this person will just talk over the top of them, and then it just ends up being this whole dominating thing. There are some people that it's really hard to actually have decent conversations with. So you can kind of remove yourself from that and just be like, yeah, well, you're actually just not really very good at this. If you have time to articulate a very considered response and then have time to tune out before you give that response, then that person just needs to shut up. So, like, I'm a talker and I'm in constant danger of monopolizing every conversation I ever have. So I have to monitor myself very, very strongly in conversations. And one of the things I do is I try to model myself on people who I have excellent conversations with. And that seems to help a lot. So if I have a great conversation with someone and I'm feeling really engaged and really enjoying the conversation, to be honest, because I am an extrovert and I am quite confident, I lead most conversations that I'm in. So if someone else leads a conversation that we're having, I love that because I'm like, oh, wow, you go and say things. That's awesome.
Yeah, you like, do I'm, all the work. This is a crazy.
Yeah, I really appreciate the break. Like I'm right in there. But the thing is that So whenever I'm having a great conversation with someone, I try to note down what it is that's making the conversation so great. And the thing that makes a conversation so great is generosity. Always, always generosity. It's someone listening to someone. It's inquiring further about what that person just said. It's asking an interesting question and it's giving detailed feedback that isn't centered around you. That's another trap that people sometimes fall into is giving advice based on their own experiences when what they should be doing is say, oh my God, that's awful. The same thing happened to me. And what I did was a better response is something along the lines of, that's really awful that that happened to you. Perhaps you could try this, putting the onus back on the person who it is that you're speaking to. At the end of the day, people love talking about themselves, and the fastest way to get people to think you're super charming is to just ask people questions about themselves constantly.
And give them your attention. Like there's that saying that says like the greatest gift you can give anyone is the gift of your undivided attention. And I do think it's not a natural skill, and it's something we all need to work on. Like it's just a societal thing at the moment, I've been practicing it more because I live in my head. That's where I prefer to be more than anywhere else in the world. And I also have a very short attention span. So listening for me is actually quite hard, but I've been practicing a lot lately. And yeah, I have noticed much better quality of conversations, much better. Also, the other thing, the overthinker in me is like, I don't want to make someone talk to me if they don't really want to be talking to me. So normally when I'm in conversation with people, I'm kind of trying to stay one step ahead of like them not wanting to talk to me anymore. And I've just kind of made myself stop doing that and be in the moment of the conversation. And like my interactions are so much better with people now. So yes.
I'm the opposite of that. I can't break it. I can't be silent. If I'm meeting someone for the first time, I'm talking constantly. And if there's a gap in the conversation, I'll just fill it because I will be like, awkwardness will happen if I don't keep talking. So I just keep doing it. It's a shocker. I should get better at that. So on to our next segment, which is recommendation of the week. So Kelly, what's saving your life this week?
Oh, the Watermark Airport Bookstore at Sydney Airport. I love that place.
It's great. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Yeah, did it close for a while? Like, because I do distinctly remember being at Sydney Airport and going, where's the bookstore gone? Like, where's the place that I hang out when I'm stuck at Sydney Airport? So anyway, it's an amazing bookstore. It has a great cafe. It's just a very comfortable place to hang out. And you kind of actually forget that you are at an airport because I don't really like it. You know, some people love airports.
I love them.
Yeah, I don't like airports. I don't know why. I just hate them. Anyway, I love that Watermark Airport. I got to the airport like 5 hours early.
Of course you did.
Well, it's because like the conference I was at finished up a bit earlier than I thought it was going to. I thought it was kind of an all-day thing on Sunday and ended up being a half-day thing. And I was like, oh, that's fine. I mean, there's two other flights. Surely I'll be able to jump on one of those. No, thank you. It was good. In the end, I got to hang out at the Watermark Cafe. I did a bit of writing. I got quite ahead on a project that I was working on. So it was quite good. I just kind of said to myself, Kelly, how often do you wish at home you could have 4 hours all to yourself with no one talking to you? You've got it now. Get to work. And, yeah, it was just a very nice, comfortable place to do that. And I shout out to the Sydney Airport Watermark Bookstore Cafe people. You have a lovely place there.
Mine this week is Big Mac salads, which sounds really weird. So Ben and I have been eating low-carb high-fat.
Everyone listening is like, oh, my God, Big Mac salads. Tell us more.
So Ben and I have been eating low-carb high-fat for a year now, and it's going great. Like the way we eat now. But we just both had this random craving for a Big Mac the other day, which is so weird. Like I haven't eaten McDonald's in 20 years. Yeah. Like unless I'm like really, really drunk. I can't eat McDonald's when I'm hungover. I have to be actually currently drunk.
Still drunk.
Still drunk. And it needs to be really early in the morning. Like, I can't eat McDonald's before 2 a.m. It's more of like a 3 a.m. sort of a thing. So aside from like a cheeky six-pack of nuggets at 3 a.m. after a very rare big night out because I don't do big night outs, I haven't eaten McDonald's since I was a teenager, unless I'm like grabbing a coffee if I'm, you know, on a highway or whatever. But we saw an ad for a Big Mac the other day, you know, the two all beef patties kind of ad. I'm not going to say the whole thing because McDonald's isn't paying us. Yeah. But I looked at it and I was just like, oh, wow, a Big Mac. And because Ben's a celiac, he hasn't had a Big Mac since he was about 13 because his celiac disease kicked in when he was about 16. And we both just realized we hadn't had a Big Mac in ages. And then Ben was like, I really want a Big Mac. And then I was thinking, I can make us a Big Mac salad. So I got like proper iceberg lettuce and I shredded up some cheese and I fried us up some beef patties and then I googled the Big Mac special sauce and it's really easy. It was super easy. It was so good. It's just mayonnaise and pickles and some like spices and stuff and vinegar and then you shake it all up and it tasted exactly like the Big Mac sauce. And so I just did this salad with the sauce and it was one of those meals that I prepared thinking, you know, it's highly likely this is going to be super average. And then I handed it to Ben and we both just ate it and then we were just thinking, well, we're geniuses. Like this is the greatest thing that's ever happened. So we've had it again since then and I only did it like 3 days ago. So that's our new favorite food is a Big Mac salad.
Oh my God. I'm totally Googling Big Mac special sauce and I'm totally making that for the salad I am making for dinner tonight. This is going to be amazing.
Really good. And it's like it's a ketogenic sauce as well. There's no sugar in it. Oh, there might be a little bit of sugar in the pickles. Yeah. But apart from that, it's all like – but it's a tiny amount. The rest of it's just, you know, a whole egg mayo. It's like it's a fattening sauce, but I eat a lot of fat, so that's fine for me.
Cool. All right. So today's topic that we're going to discuss is called – positively reframing criticism. So I think we've spoken about handling criticism before, but this is just a different spin on it. And it's, I think we're going to talk more specifically to kind of turning criticism around and coming at it from a better place. Is that right, Carls?
Yeah. So a listener suggested this topic and I absolutely love it because I'm a big fan of anything that requires people to take responsibility for themselves. So whenever someone comes at me with a question like, how do I positively reframe criticism? I just want to hug them because I just think you are so on the right track by taking responsibility for your actions in reaction to this thing that's happening to you. High five, you're awesome, let's do this. So the solution to criticism is to never get less criticism because that's completely impossible. And I found this quote from Aristotle that I absolutely loved. Criticism is something you can easily avoid by saying nothing, doing nothing, and being nothing. So if you never get criticized, it means you haven't been standing for anything. It means you haven't been trying anything and it means you haven't been being anything. So there's a frequent kind of backhanded compliment I get quite often on Smaggle.
Like, oh my God.
It's like, but I get this a lot and it's quite interesting feedback, but it's generally always when people are complimenting me, but someone will say something along the lines of, I love Smaggle's writing. I don't always agree with everything she says, but I really enjoy her blog. And like, I know that I had a big tanty in the last episode about people saying, I disagree with you and that's okay. This is a completely different thing. So like, I was meaning that one when people disagree with me when I'm providing facts or I'm saying something that applies to me that doesn't apply to everyone.
Where they chop that line out when they have no comeback so that
– Exactly. They have facts. No research to back up what they're saying. But I really enjoy being disagreed with because why would I want people to agree with me all the time? That would be so incredibly boring. And also a lot of learning comes from disputes. So most of the most important things I've learned in life have come from arguments where someone's come in and said, well, no, actually, this is true. And I've gone, that's not true. And then I've researched it and gone, ah, okay, that is actually entirely true. So if we don't challenge people and challenge ourselves and say things that we think are true, then we're never going to get criticism, and we need criticism in order for us all to become better learners and to know more about the world and to be able to become critical thinkers within that world. So
yes, I think that's such criticism. A point. Yeah, I think it's such a good point about that whole critical thinking thing, because that's another thing. Actually, we're going to do an episode on this. Soon, things we didn't learn in high school. But
oh god, yeah.
We're not taxes. Really. We're not. We're not taught how to be critical thinkers. Like we're supposed to be. Like that's the whole point of the scientific method and all and things like that. Is it's teaching us in theory to interrogate information in a critical manner and understand bias and understand agendas and understand that pretty much anything that anyone tells us, there's an agenda sitting behind it. But we never really, but then I don't know, we kind of come out of high school and then we go into the real world and we're, you know, we're in a world of Facebook now where we're in a giant echo chamber. So Facebook basically understands what we like to hear and what our, you know, what our leanings are and just shows us more of the same. And to the point
– that's so true. Like when the same-sex marriage vote happened in Australia, I was actually I was fairly confident it was going to get through. I really thought that more people would vote yes, but that's just because in my Facebook bubble where they know I'm pro-marriage equality and I don't have friends that aren't pro-marriage equality, I was just in this big, beautiful bubble of everyone. There was no one who was against it. And then – seeing those stats come back, even though we won, it was still like, really that many people think that? Like it hurt my heart.
I just remember when they did the announcement on TV and like my heart was just thumping out of its chest, even though I have zero skin in the game. But just basic, you know, human rights, is some skin in the game. But yeah, and I was so stoked when obviously it came back, yes, but I was a bit dismayed by the margin. Yeah. I thought it would be a lot bigger, but
I was kind of basing it off the last plebiscite where the where they were giving Indigenous Australians the right to vote, which is just so appalling. I can't believe they held a plebiscite for that. That was like when my mum was a teenager and she's so embarrassed. She just is like, I can't believe that happened in my lifetime. I'm embarrassed that that happened. But that was like 92% came back yes. And I was thinking, so you should. That's a great result. And part of me was kind of expecting the same for marriage equality, but yeah, anyway.
Yeah, it didn't happen. Anyway, okay, so back to, I guess, onto the topic of how do we reframe criticism, negative criticism. Well, is there any such thing as positive criticism? No, I don't think so.
No.
So I guess the first point is to maybe look at it as an opportunity for personal growth, which sounds so naff, like it sounds like something your mum would say and you just want to slap her and say don't. Yeah. Look at it as an opportunity for personal growth, darling. And you're just like, I don't want to. I just want to cry. But, but you know, in reality, we are all adults here. Criticism, any criticism is an invitation and an opportunity to self-reflect. You know, we do not have to agree with the person who's criticized us, but we can take the opportunity to just literally just check in with ourselves and say, and just ask us, you know, are we good here? Like is, and do you know what I do usually find with criticism, even if I don't agree with it, there is probably always a small grain of truth. And I kind of just acknowledge that truth and I check in with myself that I am addressing that truth and being as, yeah, the best self I can be. And then I go, okay, and then move on. Because also, you know, a lot of criticism comes from unrealistic expectations. So an example on the weekend, I gave a talk. It was a talk on editing. And in my editing talk, I had steps, step one, step two, step three. And someone pointed out to me later that on the worksheet that I provided for that talk, I had stage one, stage two, stage three. And
oh, come on.
And she was like, you know, it was so good to see that you had made this clear editing error. And I was like, well, you know.
Is it an editing error? I wouldn't say that.
I said, look, you know what? There's truth in that. It is an error. I should have paid more attention to detail. But then I checked in myself and went, you know what, I'm pretty comfortable with calling it steps in my talk and having it stages on a sheet. So, you know, I guess take everything with it, be able to take things with a grain of salt. I could have, like, the person sitting next to me was far more offended on my behalf than I was offended for myself, because I was like, well, you know, it's true. I did have stage and talk step. And
can I just point out that stages and steps are the same thing?
Yeah, same. But, you know, like I guess the point I'm trying to make is there's an element of truth in it, but just because an element of truth in it doesn't mean you have to like castigate yourself for getting it wrong. Just, you know, acknowledge it and go, yeah, I got it wrong and next step, move on.
But also people who point out shit like that in presentations to the speaker in a room full of people, they're the worst. They just are. Like,
I really hope this person's not listening. If she is, I don't think you're the worst. But it was just an interesting thing that did not
bother I wasn't there, obviously, but I've been in rooms where people have done that before and I'm like, oh my God, just don't. Like, that's the worst. No.
Yeah, you gotta be, and I guess this is the thing as well with criticism, is sometimes you just have to be able to laugh and go, well, you know, it's true. I did do that, but oh well, move on.
So looking at it as an opportunity for personal growth, I totally agree with what you said about there generally always being a grain of truth in all criticism, because it is true. Like, even though I completely disagree with what that woman said, it is true. Like, they were those
they are having, different. They are two different things.
having editing consistency, that's a thing you didn't do.
Yeah, so, and I was giving a talk on editing.
On editing. So, yeah, like, I do see her point. I take back what I said. That was fine. But that's something that my mum has actually taught me. So I came home from school one day. I was really angry because I had gotten like a B on an English assignment instead of an A, and I really thought I deserved an A. And I was one of those students that would go to the teacher and be like, explain yourself.
Just as what I will just shit? Put my hand up and say, I too was one of those people.
Is anyone surprised? I don't think so. Kelly and Carly, the biggest pains in the ass that you could possibly have taught in high school.
If you're going to give us a B, you got to be able to stand behind it, dude.
Absolutely. And you know what? Like, very, very – I very rarely got Bs. I was an A student most of the time, just because that's what was acceptable to me. And anytime I got a B, I had a few teachers. Like, I had one teacher who gave me a B once, and she just could not back it up. Like, there was just no way. And I knew exactly what had happened because she was like pregnant with her fifth child or something, and she was very, very pregnant. And she just had hardcore pregnancy brain, and teachers were just not supported through their pregnancies back then, like at all. If you're a high school teacher, it's like, whatever, just get in there and go for it. And she had left the building. Like, it was just so not there. And I was really nice to her, and I was just like, really, really? And she kept trying to defend herself, and then eventually she just went, yeah, no, I don't know what happened there. And I'm like, it's okay, we'll just fix it and it's all fine. But this teacher actually defended giving me a B and was able to point out why. And so naturally I got really angry. I went home to my mum and I was like, and she said this and she said this. And her main thing was that because our teachers at school knew a lot about what we did outside of school, because that was sort of the Catholic school system way. They were always quite involved in what you did. And I did a lot of theatre. She knew where I worked as well. I worked Friday, Saturday and Sundays at a newsagent, and then I rehearsed or performed most nights of the week. And my marks had started slipping because I did four shows back to back. And she was like, I really think that that's what the issue is. And I was like, you don't know me. And then I went home and my mum was just like, do you think she might be right? And I was hysterical. Like, I'm not an emotional person, but I went home and I sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And mum was just like, I think you might be a little bit overtired, darling. And then I was kind of like, yeah, all right, maybe I have been burning the candle a bit. So I looked at that criticism. There wasn't even a grain of truth in that. It was the whole truth. That was a straight up truth fish slap in the face. And I looked at it and then I readjusted and decided to not do every single show that I got cast in, and tried to cut back a little bit on my shifts because, you know, doing year 12 at the same time as all of that, I don't know when I found time to sleep. But so I think looking at it as an opportunity for personal growth is the number one thing that you should do every time you get criticism.
Yeah, I see it as it's a bit of a gift, isn't it? I mean, I'm not one of those people who has outlandish opinions and opens herself up to like hate readers and people leaving awful messages, you know, on my blog or on my Facebook. But
yeah, neither do I. But yeah, Sometimes I get stuff where I'm like, what is it that you thought I said? Why are you being so mean?
But, you know, I always think to myself, look, this is a gift. Like, if this person is thinking this, then other people must be thinking it too. And they've got the guts to – okay, sometimes it's just sheer nastiness, fair enough. But most of the time it takes guts to give someone negative criticism.
Definitely.
And so, yeah, I kind of see it as a bit of a gift, and I really appreciate someone taking the time to – do it, you know, which sounds really weird, but I just know that I struggle to give criticism to people, even when I think it, you know, it could help them be better or could help them have a better product or, you know, for whatever reason, like I care, but I don't care so much that I'm going to put myself out there to give them negative criticism. So I kind of appreciate the people that do, which sounds weird, but
I actually gave negative criticism the other day. You know how I always say on like podcasts, if someone leaves a negative review, I'm always like, oh, you loser. Like, why do you even care that much? Yeah. I left a negative review on an app the other day and it was scathing. Like I put all of my hatred into this review and it got voted to the very, very top of the app. Like it's the most helpful review on the app, because I'll tell you what app it is, because it is ridiculous. It's the Pay Stay Pay app for car parking. It is an abomination. It does not work. I need to call them every time I want to pay for parking. They only let you register like a primary vehicle and then you have to have these secondary vehicles. And I'm like, I actually don't have a car that's mine. I drive my partner's car or my parents' car or my best friend's car. I could be driving any one of these cars and you have to keep change. Anyway, it's a terrible, terrible app and it's government funded. So I just went, whoever managed to get the government to fund this, they are having a laugh. It is a joke. And I just went, I went nuts on it. But I was just like, because I don't have a choice in using that app. And I have to use it if I want to park in those places. So that is actually, I think that is a very valid form of criticism, and it turns out I'm very good at it because top voted criticism there.
So, which leads really nicely onto, you can't change the way people give criticism, but you can change your response. So, how should those app developers have responded to your criticism?
They have actually responded, and they said, please call our call center for more information. Yeah. I'm like, I'm trying to avoid calling your call center because I shouldn't have to call someone to pay for parking in 2018. For goodness sake. Anyway, our second point of discussion is it's important to look at criticism as an opportunity to improve relationships. This is also a hard one because this is when criticism comes from someone that you love, which is very hard. I appreciate being given feedback from people that I love because it gives me the chance to improve that relationship. So if a friend says to me, hey, I feel like I haven't seen you very much recently. Is there some way that you can make some time for me this week? I appreciate hearing that because I would rather hear that than be so busy that I haven't noticed that I haven't been there for that friend. And then in 6 months down the track, they've gotten so resentful of me not being able to give them any time that there's an even bigger gap in our relationship. I'd rather someone just say, hey, I miss you. Can we catch up? Rather than let it fester away. So, and it might hurt a little bit hearing that your friend thinks that you're not being a very good friend, but it's better to hear that earlier rather than down the track when it makes it so much worse.
Oh, I so agree. It's really funny. My mum did something the other day or a little while ago that really offended me, and I had like worked myself up into this frenzy of like, I can't believe she did that, and you know, she was shaming me publicly, And anyway, I worked myself up into such a state that in the end I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to call. I texted her, admittedly. I didn't call because, you know, a conflict averse.
Like, who uses phones for calling people?
Me and my mum.
What is it, 1999?
Exactly. But I just messaged her and I went, you know that thing you did? Like, I said specifically not to, and why did you? And anyway, she rang me because mum doesn't text. And she was like, and she just explained it all. And she explained like she had no idea, like, and there was certainly no malice behind it and da, da, da. And anyway, we sorted it all out. And I said to her, you know, look, I messaged you because I knew I could, you know, like anybody else, I would have let it fester and stew and I would have been angry and I would have made all these stories up about their motivation behind doing it. But because it was my mum, I could just call her and, you know, or message her and go, why did you do that? That really hurt. That, you know, that was, I found that really hurtful. And then she was able to ring and go, I'm so sorry you found that hurtful. That wasn't my intent, blah, blah, blah. And we, you know, and it was all fine. We sorted it out. And, you know, and I kind of think, you know, and she said, isn't it good that you can just tell me that I hurt your feelings and then we can sort it out? And I was like, yeah, it is good. And, you know, and I think it's a reflection of the strength of a relationship that someone can tell you something like that, like give you negative criticism, because it means they think, one, that your relationship is worth having the conversation, and two, God, yeah, that you can hack it. So, yeah, I kind of think in a relationship, close relationship kind of context, it's a real compliment if someone like a friend or a family member can say, hey, that thing that you did really hurt my feelings, or I didn't like it, and give you the chance to make good or at least explain yourself, rather than going away and making up stories about why you did what you did, which are just so far from the truth. It's not funny. So, yeah, I would take it as a compliment.
Are we moving on to point three?
Yes. Okay. I think we kind of talked about that one already, but, yeah, you talk about it.
Oh, no, this was just in terms of like professional work, or kind of if you have some sort of creative thing that you do, try to look at it as a compliment. So the more attention your work receives in general, the more negative feedback you'll receive. So particularly like with our podcast, like it's the more people listen to it, the more regular we get negative feedback. Not that it happens very often, to be honest, like it's actually quite good, but it's the same with Smaggle, and it's the same with any type of, you know, writing or creative stuff that you put out there. It just means that you're reaching more people, and more people are talking about you, and more people are loving you, because the more negative feedback you get, it just means that the saturation of what you're doing is so much bigger, which is actually great.
Yeah, it's like you haven't made it as a writer until you've gotten your first one-star review on Amazon or Goodreads. So, yeah. Yeah, it's a true story. Okay, so next point I think is about changing your response. You explained that one, Carls.
Okay, so you can't change the way people give you criticism, but you can change your response. So obviously it would be much nicer to hear that, you know, you're a social butterfly in the office and everyone loves you, but you need to keep the socializing to a minimum, rather than being told that you're wasting time chatting all day. The thing is that both of those messages are exactly the same, and you don't have control over how those messages are presented to you. The only thing you have control over is your reaction. So I hear, I'm part of a lot of Facebook groups, and there's a lot of like support things that go on where people say, oh, this thing happened at work and I would have much preferred if he said this, or I would have much preferred if it was dealt with in this way, and I would have preferred if this happened. You can't actually make preferences for the way that other people deal with things. The only thing you control is the way that you respond.
Yeah. Otherwise, or you could give them some feedback about how they
constructive criticism.
Some constructive criticism about how they approached you with their problem. Yeah, I agree with you. So my trick is to know that I am always going to respond defensively in the moment. It's just I'm a sensitive person, and I don't know who likes criticism, but if anybody, but I definitely...
I respond defensively as well.
Yeah, I think pretty much everybody does. So I kind of like read the thing, or I hear the thing that's been said, and I accept the little punch in the gut feeling that I experience. And then I kind of just take a deep breath. And even if the person is not being respectful, or hasn't presented their thoughts respectfully, I respond to them as if they did. And it's funny how much it just takes the heat out of the moment by just acting as if they presented you, you know, presented their feedback to you in a really respectful way. And it just helps me control my response. And do you know what? I always prefer, not always possible, but I always prefer, if I can, to elevate the level of the interaction. So, because, you know, if you race to the bottom, you get there pretty fast, and it's a pretty horrible place to be in, so far as, you know, hurling insults back and forth at each other. So if I can just elevate the conversation a little bit, I just find that immediately the other person will come to the party, and it just changes the conversation as well. So that's how, I'm not saying I perfectly respond like that every time, but it's what I'm aiming to do. And as you said, like, you can't control how someone has delivered something to you, but you can control how you deal with it and respond to it. So, yeah.
Exactly. And I also think, don't add fuel to the fire. If someone's giving you criticism and you act like a complete tool bag about it, then they're going to feel very justified in giving you that criticism. Whereas if they give you the criticism and you take it on board with a smile and respond very positively and then fix that behavior, it'll make them wonder if you were even doing that thing in the first place. Like, just confuse them.
What
just
we're
stop
saying
doing
is
the
just
thing
just mess with them. Just completely screw with their minds by taking it on board with a smile.
Another point that I wanted to discuss was, think about how you prefer to receive criticism and make sure you deliver your own thoughtfully and carefully and in the manner in which you would like to receive it.
Yeah, I totally agree with this. So as I mentioned, like, you know, with the benefit of, you know, once you get into your 40s, which is where I am, which I can't believe, even though I sound like I'm 15, people are always freaked out to find out how old I am, given how young I sound. But anyway, I always pause before I react. And I think this is where this thing we've talked about before on the podcast about the concept of, is it true? Is it necessary? Is it kind? So if I am going to deliver feedback or criticism to somebody, I do run it through that filter of, is it true? Yes. Is it really necessary to tell this person this thing? Yes. Then what's the kindest or least aggressive way to deliver this message? So, and yeah, because I do always think, if I'm going to be on the end of this message, how do I want it to be presented? And I'm not saying, you know, you get it perfect, but it's going to be better than if you deliver it from a kind of an angry place. So, yeah.
Definitely.
And then I think I think I mentioned this already, but I just wanted to kind of wrap up with this thought, was that the main way to, because the whole point of this conversation was, how do we positively reframe criticism? And I guess what I come back to is to remind yourself that someone cared enough to say something. So, yes, that brings us to the end of this topic and to the last two segments of the show. Sorry, Carl.
No, that's okay. So we've got Kicked Ass and Kicked Our Ass. We introduce these two segments, one because we think it's important to celebrate things we've done well, and also because it's nice to share the things that haven't gone so well to prove that we're not self-improvement robots with perfect lives. So what did you kick ass at this week, Kelly?
What did I kick ass at? Oh, I have been trying to write an article for this quite big US website, one with really high standards, for a while about editing. Like, they kind of approached me and said, you know, can you write an article about how to edit well? And I was like, yeah, of course I can. Like, this is totally my bag. But then I could not separate writing and editing, because so much of editing is rewriting. And so every time I went to write this article and every time I restructured it, it just always came back to, you know, writing tips mixed in with editing tips. And they kept saying, no, it just needs to be editing. And I'm like, it can't be, it won't work. Anyway, this conference that I went to on the weekend was a copywriting conference, and the topic that I was presenting on, as I mentioned, was the topic of editing. And
that's perfect.
And, you know, it was amazing, because when I sat down to write the presentation, I ran into the same problem that I was having with this damn article, and I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And then this analogy came to me, and I'm not going to say what the analogy is, but I was just like, oh my God, I think that's amazing. I think that stands up, and it allows me to separate out the two and allows me to convey what I need to convey without mixing the two. Is this going to work? And anyway, so I presented it at this conference, and the analogy was very, very well received. It involved ice cream. Everybody was very much on board with it. And I was really proud of that, because it has been like this thing that has been gnawing at me for ages about, how do I explain my editing process in the context of editing and not in the context of, you know, write and rewrite and edit and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that I was just, very, very happy. It made me glad to see it went down well at the conference. So, yes, Carl, what did you kick ass at?
Mine is that I secured a sponsored post on Smaggle on my own this week. I've done it several times before. It's actually huge. Like that's I have done it several times before, but it never stops being thrilling because I'm not a salesperson. That's not in my skill set at all. I'm a writer and that's why I have an agent, but I get approached by companies and I can deal with them independently. And this partnership is really great. And I'm really proud that I was able to negotiate it on my own and on my own terms. So yeah, that was pretty cool. I liked that.
Nice one. And what kicked our ass this week? I will go first. Definitely my workload at the moment. It is fairly extreme. It is work. It's all work that I love doing. Like it's all editing or designing books or book coaching, or it's all book related. But there is just a really a lot of it on at this very moment. I've got these two like massive deadlines over the next 2 weeks, but I think like once the next 2 weeks are done, I will be able to breathe and my workload won't be kicking my ass as much. Carl's?
Mine is the traffic in my suburb.
I hate that traffic is a thing for you now.
I was blissfully unaware of traffic for years and years, and I've gone from not driving at all to driving every day, and I just hate motorists. I hate them. And I get that I am a motorist, but I just hate the whole shebang. It's awful. And I live in a really old suburb that just wasn't built for the amount of people that live here. So you kind of need to weave in and out of parked cars on the side of the road and navigate train tracks and deal with trams, and like the whole thing is just, it's a fucking nightmare. And I generally only drive 10 minutes up to the road to the gym and back, but my biggest gripe is how impatient people are. Like, I live on a main road and I get beeped nearly every day for daring to slow down and turn into my driveway, which is perfectly legal and also necessary if I ever want to go home. But it happens nearly every day and I'm going, what is making you beep me right now? I'm really sorry that my driveway happens to be in the way of you speeding down a road that you're not supposed to go along 40 Ks. On, but I'm allowed to turn into my own driveway, but it's just this impatience. People just want to get to where they're going, and me slowing down to turn into my own driveway is clearly pissing them off. I don't know where these people come from, but they're everywhere and they're the worst.
They're all in your suburb.
All in my face. Get out.
All right.
So yeah, that just about wraps it up. Don't forget that we have a Patreon page, which is live and kicking. We've got a couple of goals for our Patreon page. The first of which is to reach $500 per month of pledges. And we're halfway to our first goal, so we would love it if you could help us out there. If you love listening to the show and you get awesome tidbits that help you improve your life every week and you want to support us, just go to patreon.com/straightandcurly.
Yes, and before I wrap up, I just want to make a bit of a shout out to some of our listeners who came up to me at the conference. I saw the lovely Matt Fenwick, who has done a shout out for us in the group before and got a lot of people contributing to our Patreon page. So it was great to catch up with you, Matt, and thank you to everyone who came up and said that they enjoy the show. I really appreciate it. Finally, jump into the Facebook group discussion for this week and tell us this. What is your secret weapon for positively reframing criticism, or is there something you need to work on in that regard? We'll see you in there. Thank you so much for listening to Straight and Curly. This week's show notes and links will be available at straightandcurly.com.
And if you have any questions or weird self-improvement hacks you want us to trial, you can tweet us at Kelly Exeter or at Smaggle, or you can email us at hello@straightandcurly.com.